Ahoy there, and welcome aboard for another deep dive. Today we're taking a look at the U.S. Navy, and it's a pretty special one because this year the Navy celebrates a pretty big milestone.
Yeah, 250 years.
250 years, a birthday that definitely calls for some celebration. But amidst all the fanfare, our source material is painting a picture that's, well, let's just say it's not all smooth sailing.
Right. There are some serious challenges facing the Navy that we need to address.
Challenges like a shrinking fleet, recruitment struggles, and systems that seem more stuck in the past than prepared for the future.
Yeah, it's a bit of a disconnect between the image of a powerful modern Navy and the reality of the situation.
Okay, so before we get into the choppy waters, let's set a course through the basics. The Navy has four core missions, right? What are they, and how have they evolved over time?
You got it. Four core missions. First, you've got deterring aggression against the US.
Okay, so basically preventing anyone from messing with us?
Pretty much. But in a world of, constantly evolving threats and global power dynamics, that mission has become a lot more complex.
Yeah, it's not as simple as just having a big stick anymore.
Exactly. Now, the second mission that's historically been the Navy's bread and butter is keeping the commercial sea lanes open.
Right, ensuring safe trade routes for all that global commerce.
Exactly. And that was actually the Navy's original mission. But these days, it faces new challenges. You've got disruptions like we're seeing in the Red Sea, with the Houthi rebels impacting traffic through the Suez Canal.
Wow, so even something happening halfway across the world can have a ripple effect on global trade.
Oh, absolutely. It can impact everything from oil prices to the availability of everyday goods.
It's a stark reminder of how interconnected our world really is, and how vital the Navy's role is in all of that. Mission number three, projecting force. Is that as simple as just flexing your muscles on the world stage? Or is there more to it than that?
Oh, it's definitely more nuanced than just showing off your firepower. These days, it's about this really complex interplay of diplomacy, strategic positioning, and technological superiority.
So it's about deterring potential adversaries while also reassuring allies and maintaining stability in those crucial regions.
Exactly. It's a delicate balancing act.
Okay, and then finally, the fourth mission. And this one I know a little something about, thanks to my son in the Marines, delivering the Marines.
Yeah, getting those boots on the ground wherever they need to be.
Essential for supporting all those other missions. So we've got these four vital missions, but our source is pretty clear that only one of them is really running smoothly. That would be the nuclear submarine deterrent, right? The boomers.
That's the one. While the nuclear deterrent is considered the most reliable mission, even it's facing some challenges.
Like what?
Well, particularly the delays that are plaguing the development of that new Columbia class of submarines.
And if those delays continue, what kind of implications does that have for the U.S.'s, ability to maintain a credible nuclear deterrent?
Well, it's definitely a cause for concern. Any gap in that deterrent could potentially embolden adversaries and create instability on the world stage.
Okay, so the nuclear deterrent, while facing its own hurdles, is still somewhat on course. But what about those other three missions? Our source paints a pretty concerning picture there.
Yeah, there are definitely some alarming examples of things going wrong. We already talked about the Houthi rebels and their impact on global trade. But closer to home, you have that incident with the USS Gettysburg accidentally firing missiles at its own F-18s.
Wait, hold on. Accidentally firing missiles at their own planes? That sounds more like something out of a movie than real life.
I know, right? But it really happened, and it just highlights the kind of challenges the Navy is facing. One of those missiles missed a plane by only 100 feet.
That is way too close for comfort. So we've got these worrying incidents, but what's at the root of them? Why is the Navy seemingly struggling to, fulfill these missions effectively?
Well, the source points to three main culprits: a dwindling fleet, a lack of qualified sailors, and a culture that's really struggling to adapt.
Okay, so let's break those down one by one. Starting with the fleet itself, the source says there are just too few ships.
Yeah, that's a big problem. The high cost of building new ships and those really slow production timelines, they're major hurdles. They make it tough to maintain a fleet size that can actually, meet the demands of a global presence.
So it's not just about having outdated ships, it's about not having enough ships, period.
Exactly.
What's driving those high costs and production delays, though? Is it just a matter of, complex technology and demanding specs, or are there some deeper systemic issues at play?
Well, it's a complex mix of factors, but one major contributor is this thing called the Pentagon monopsony.
Okay, Pentagon monopsony, that's a new one for me. Break it down for us. What does that mean?
Basically, a monopsony is the opposite of a monopoly. Instead of one seller controlling the market, you have one buyer. In this case, it's the Pentagon.
Okay, I'm with you.
Since there's only a limited civilian market for the kind of products that these defense contractors make, there's less competition and less incentive for them to really innovate or reduce costs.
So the Navy is kind of stuck with a limited number of suppliers,
yeah,
which drives up the costs and slows down production.
It's a vicious cycle.
It really is.
Yeah.
Okay, so even if we magically solve the shipbuilding problem tomorrow, it seems like there's another big hurdle, finding enough people to actually crew those ships.
Yeah, that's the second major problem. The recruitment crisis. The Navy, along with the rest of the armed forces, is having a tough time attracting qualified recruits.
And why is that?
Part of it is that there's just a declining familiarity with military service among young people today. Fewer of them have family connections to the military, which has historically been a big factor in, you know, whether or not someone considers enlisting.
That makes sense.
Right.
When you grow up around military life, it's easier to picture yourself following that path.
Exactly.
But if fewer young people have that exposure, it's only natural that recruitment becomes more challenging.
Mm.
But it's not just about getting people to sign up, right? It's also about making sure they're adequately trained and prepared for the complexities of, you know, modern naval warfare.
That's exactly right. And that brings us to the third problem, the training system and the overall culture within the Navy.
Okay, so what's wrong with the training and the culture?
Well, the current system often discourages risk-taking and innovation.
That doesn't sound good.
It's not. It hinders their ability to adapt to new challenges and embrace new technologies.
It's like they're trying to navigate a rapidly changing world with a compass that's stuck pointing in one direction.
That's a great analogy. And that rigidity, you know, it creates a real problem when it comes to dealing with unpredictable scenarios and adversaries who are constantly evolving their tactics.
So we've got a pretty clear picture of the problems: a shrinking fleet, a recruitment crisis, and a culture that's resistant to change. But before we get too bogged down in the doom and gloom, our source does offer some potential solutions.
Yeah, there's some light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
The article highlights some proposals that came out of the Trump administration, actually.
Really?
Yeah, aimed at tackling these really complex challenges.
All right, well, let's dive into those solutions and see if they hold water. First up, we have something called the DOGE Commission, and there's a proposal to spin off a dedicated branch of it. Can you shed some light on what this commission is all about and why this spinoff is being proposed?
Sure. So the DOGE Commission, or the Defense Business Board, is this group that provides advice to the Secretary of Defense.
Okay.
And the proposal is to create a new branch of it specifically focused on shaking up the defense acquisition process.
So basically trying to streamline how the Navy buys its ships and equipment.
Yeah, injecting some much-needed innovation and agility into that whole system, maybe even borrowing some ideas from Silicon Valley.
Interesting. So who's spearheading this idea?
Well, the source points to Raj Shah and Christopher Kirchhoff as key figures behind this proposal. They led the Defense Innovation Unit, also known as Unit X.
Unit X sounds pretty cool.
It was focused on connecting the Department of Defense with, you know, cutting-edge tech companies in Silicon Valley.
Ah, so they've got experience in shaking things up.
They do.
Okay, so we've got an idea to tackle the procurement issues and bring in some outside-the-box thinking. But what about the recruitment crisis?
Mm-hmm.
That seems like a much bigger beast to tackle.
You're not wrong. And the next proposal is definitely a bold one. Mandatory national service.
Whoa, mandatory national service. That's a pretty radical idea for a country that's, you know, traditionally relied on an all-volunteer military. What are the arguments for such a drastic change?
Well, the idea is to convene a blue ribbon panel to really seriously consider this option. Proponents argue that mandatory national service could expose a whole generation to the military.
It could potentially spark interest in service and help address that recruitment shortfall.
Exactly. They also think it could foster a stronger sense of, you know, civic duty and national unity.
It's certainly a thought-provoking idea. And who are some of the names behind this proposal?
The article mentions David Brooks, the New York Times columnist, and Pete Buttigieg.
The former transportation secretary.
Yeah.
Interesting choices, representing both sides of the political spectrum.
Right.
Okay, so we've got a proposal to shake up procurement and another to potentially revolutionize recruitment. But what about that third challenge, the culture within the Navy itself? How do you fix a system that seems resistant to change, you know, one that's stuck in its ways?
Well, the proposal here calls for an internal reform panel, but with a twist. It wouldn't be led by current officials, but by highly successful retired military leaders, like General David Petraeus, Admiral Sandy Winnefield, and Mike Gallagher.
So individuals who understand the inner workings of the military, but also have the experience and authority to actually push for real change.
Exactly. They've succeeded within the existing culture, but they also recognize the need for evolution.
They've got the credibility and hopefully the clout to drive meaningful reform.
Hopefully.
Okay, so three distinct proposals, each aiming to address a different facet of the Navy's challenges. But amidst all these proposals, one thing our source really emphasizes is a sense of urgency. Why is it so critical to act quickly?
The author argues that we just can't afford to wait another generation to address these issues. The longer we wait, the more difficult and costly these problems become. You know, the stakes are simply too high to ignore.
That's a sobering thought.
Yeah.
And it definitely sets the stage for a deeper exploration of these issues. In the next part of our deep dive, we'll take a closer look at, you know, the potential benefits and drawbacks of these proposed solutions. And we'll consider what a future with a revitalized Navy might actually look like.
You know, these proposed solutions, they offer some interesting possibilities, but they also raise some pretty critical questions, like take that spinoff of the Defense Business Board, the DOGE Commission. Will that really be enough to disrupt the status quo in defense acquisition? I mean, it seems like a pretty targeted approach, but is it enough?
Yeah, it's like trying to turn a battleship with a tugboat.
Yeah.
Can a small focus group really make a dent in such a massive system?
It's a good question. And then you've got mandatory national service on the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
That's a huge societal shift. Where do you even begin to untangle the potential impacts of a program like that? The logistics alone would be mind-boggling.
It really would. I mean, Think about the sheer scale of it. Potentially millions of young people entering some form of service every year. How do you even begin to structure a program that can effectively manage that influx, provide meaningful experiences, and cater to such a diverse range of individuals?
Yeah, and how do you ensure it doesn't just become another bureaucratic checkbox, you know, a burden rather than an opportunity?
Right. Would it actually foster a sense of civic duty, or could it end up breeding resentment and resistance?
Those are all valid concerns. And let's not forget about the potential impact on the military itself. Integrating a large number of individuals, many of whom may not have chosen to serve, could significantly alter the culture and dynamics within the armed forces.
It makes you wonder if there's a way to address the recruitment needs without resorting to such a sweeping measure. You know, maybe there are alternative solutions that haven't been fully explored yet.
It's possible. But even if mandatory national service isn't the answer, the recruitment crisis still demands some creative solutions. And then there's the issue of cultural reform, which is often overlooked, but arguably the most challenging to actually tackle.
Yeah, it's that classic soft problem that often gets overshadowed by the hard issues of ships and budgets.
Exactly.
But as we've discussed, a culture that stifles innovation and risk-taking can be just as detrimental to the Navy's long-term success.
Oh, absolutely. It's like trying to steer a ship with a broken rudder. You can have all the engine power in the world, but if you can't navigate effectively, you're not going to get very far.
So how do you fix that? How do you go about changing a culture that seems so resistant to change?
Well, that's the challenge, isn't it? The proposal for this internal reform panel is interesting because they're suggesting bringing in these highly successful retired military leaders. But can they really shake things up from the outside? Or will they just be met with resistance from those who are entrenched in the current system?
Yeah, it's a valid question. I mean, their success really hinges on a number of factors.
Yeah.
Can they articulate a compelling vision for change? Can they secure buy-in from key stakeholders? And can they actually implement concrete measures that shift the culture in a tangible way?
It's a tall order for sure. But given the urgency of the situation, it seems like it's worth exploring every avenue for reform.
I agree. But even if all these proposed solutions were implemented flawlessly, is there any guarantee that they would actually solve the Navy's problems?
There are never any guarantees when you're dealing with complex systems and constantly evolving challenges, you know?
Yeah.
But I think these proposals represent starting points, potential pathways to a more effective and adaptable Navy.
It's a journey, not a destination.
Exactly. The journey won't be easy, though, and it's going to require constant vigilance and adaptation along the way.
So where does this leave us? What's the key takeaway for someone who's just starting to grasp the complexity of the situation facing the U.S. Navy?
I think the most important takeaway is simply recognizing that the U.S. Navy is at a critical juncture. The decisions that are made in the coming years will have a profound impact on its ability to fulfill its missions, protect American interests, and maintain its position on the global stage.
It's a reminder that even institutions as seemingly powerful and enduring as the Navy aren't immune to the forces of change. you know?
Right. And it highlights the importance of informed citizenship and engaging in these discussions, asking critical questions, and holding our leaders accountable for making the tough choices that are necessary to ensure the Navy's future success.
It's about recognizing that the Navy's challenges are ultimately our challenges as a nation, and that we all have a role to play in finding solutions and ensuring its continued vitality. Now, we've spent a lot of time talking about the challenges and the proposed solutions, but I think it's worth taking a step back for a moment and asking a broader question. What if, instead of focusing on fixing what's broken, we try to envision what a thriving, future-ready Navy could actually look like?
That's a great point. It's easy to get bogged down in the problems, but it's just as important to keep our eyes on the horizon and imagine the possibilities.
Exactly. Right. So if you could paint a picture of what a truly successful and adaptable Navy would look like in the decades to come, what would be the key features? What would set it apart from the Navy we see struggling today?
Well, I think a truly successful Navy would be one that embraces innovation at every level, from its technology and tactics to its culture and personnel. It would be a Navy that's agile and responsive, capable of adapting quickly to new threats and challenges.
So a Navy that's less about following rigid protocols and more about empowering its sailors to think creatively and solve problems on the fly.
Exactly. A Navy that values initiative, rewards risk-taking, and cultivates a culture of continuous learning and improvement.
And what about the human element? We've talked about the recruitment challenges, but what kind of qualities and skills would a future-ready Navy need to prioritize in its sailors?
Beyond the traditional skills of seamanship and warfare, a future Navy would need sailors who are technologically savvy, adaptable, and able to work effectively in diverse and dynamic teams. You know, they need individuals who are not only proficient in their specific roles, but also possess critical thinking skills, problem-solving abilities, and a willingness to embrace new ideas and approaches.
So a shift from a focus on rote learning and obedience to a more flexible problem-solving mindset.
Exactly.
That sounds like a pretty significant cultural shift.
It would be, but I think it's absolutely essential if the Navy wants to remain relevant and effective in the 21st century. The challenges ahead, they demand a new breed of sailor. One who's as comfortable with technology as they are with the sea, and one who's as adept at collaborating with others as they are at following orders.
It's a compelling vision, but it also sounds like it requires a pretty fundamental rethinking of how the Navy recruits, trains, and retains its personnel.
Absolutely. Achieving that vision would require a significant investment in education training and professional development programs. It would also require a reassessment of recruitment strategies and a greater emphasis on attracting individuals with diverse background skills and perspectives.
So it's not just about building better ships and weapons. It's about investing in the human capital that will actually operate and innovate within that technological framework.
Precisely. The most advanced technology in the world is useless if you don't have the skilled and adaptable personnel to utilize it effectively.
That's a great point. And it brings us right back to the core of our discussion. The need for a Navy that's not only technologically advanced, but also culturally agile and forward-thinking. A Navy that's ready to face whatever the future may hold.
And that's where the real challenge lies. It's not enough to just upgrade ships and weapon systems. The Navy also has to evolve its culture and mindset to keep pace with a rapidly changing world.
It's about fostering a culture of continuous learning, innovation, and adaptation. A culture that sees change as an opportunity rather than a threat.
Exactly. A successful Navy of the future will be one that's constantly pushing boundaries, experimenting with new ideas, and challenging the status quo. A Navy that's not afraid to fail to learn from its mistakes and to constantly evolve.
It's a tall order, but it's essential for the Navy's long-term success.
I agree. And it's a journey that requires the collective effort of everyone involved, from the sailors on the deck plates to the admirals in the Pentagon.
It's about creating a shared vision for the future and empowering everyone to play a role in achieving it.
Exactly. Fostering a sense of ownership and shared purpose where everyone feels invested in the Navy's success.
Now, speaking of shared purpose, one of the proposals we talked about earlier was mandatory national service. We touched on the logistical hurdles and the potential cultural impacts, but I'm curious to delve a bit deeper into its potential benefits. What do you see as some of the potential upsides of such a program, both for the individuals involved and for the nation as a whole?
That's a great question. While mandatory national service definitely has its challenges, I think it also has the potential to offer some really significant benefits. For individuals, it could provide an opportunity to develop valuable skills, gain new experiences, and build connections with people from all sorts of different backgrounds.
It could be a chance to step outside of one's comfort zone.
Yeah.
to challenge oneself and to gain a deeper understanding of the world and one's place in it.
Exactly. And from a national perspective, mandatory national service could foster a stronger sense of civic duty, national unity, and shared purpose. It could help bridge divides, promote understanding, and create a more engaged and informed citizenry.
It's almost like a modern-day version of the melting pot ideal, where individuals from all walks of life come together to serve a common purpose and forge a shared national identity.
I like that analogy. And in an era of increasing polarization and division, that kind of unifying experience could be incredibly valuable.
It could be. But of course, the devil's in the details. How such a program is structured and implemented would be crucial to its success or failure.
Absolutely. It would require careful planning, thoughtful execution, and a real commitment to creating meaningful and impactful service opportunities. It's not something you can just rush into or implement haphazardly.
Right. It would require a national conversation, a thoughtful debate about what we value as a society and how we want to shape the future of our nation and its citizens.
I agree. It's a conversation that's long overdue, and one that I hope we can have in a constructive and productive way.
Me too. Well, we've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive. From the immediate challenges facing the U.S. Navy to the potential for a more adaptable and future-ready force. But before we wrap things up, I want to come back to one final question. We've talked about all these potential solutions, but what stands out to you as the most crucial element for ensuring the Navy's success in the years to come? What's the one thing you think our listeners should really take away from this deep dive?
That's a great question. And I think the answer ultimately boils down to adaptability. The Navy's ability to adapt to a rapidly changing world, to embrace new technologies, to evolve its culture, and to cultivate the next generation of sailors. That's what will determine its fate in the 21st century.
Adaptability. It's not a flashy solution. It's not a technological marvel. But it's the underlying principle that will guide the Navy's success or failure in the years to come.
I think you're right. The Navy that can adapt will be the Navy that thrives. The Navy that clings to the past will inevitably be left behind.
So it's not about finding a single silver bullet solution. It's about cultivating an organizational culture and mindset that embraces change as a constant and welcomes the challenges of the future.
Exactly. It's about creating a Navy that's not only ready for what's coming, but eager to shape the future on its own terms.
And that's a challenge that requires the collective effort of everyone involved, from the newest recruit to the most seasoned admiral.
It really does. It's about recognizing that the Navy's future isn't predetermined, but rather a tapestry that's constantly being woven by the actions and decisions of everyone who serves within its ranks.
And it's a tapestry that we as citizens have a responsibility to engage with, to understand, and to help shape. Because ultimately, the Navy's fate is intertwined with our own. We've talked a lot about, you know, adapting to the future and all. But let's be back to the present for a sec. We've laid out the challenges. We've explored some solutions. We've even, you know, tried to picture a future-ready Navy.
Yeah.
But there's this one idea that keeps popping up, and I think it deserves a deep dive of its own mandatory national service.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the more radical proposals out there, and it always sparks a lot of debate. But, you know, if we were to actually entertain this idea just as a thought experiment, what would it actually take to make mandatory national service work? Like, what are the key things we'd need to think about to make sure it's not just a logistical nightmare, but, you know, a genuinely beneficial experience for everyone involved?
Yeah, exactly. It's easy to throw out these big ideas, but the devil is always in the details.
Mm-hmm.
So let's play what if for a minute. Let's say, hypothetically, mandatory national service becomes a reality in the U.S. What would be the absolute most crucial factors in making it successful and impactful, both for the people serving and for the nation as a whole?
Well, I think first and foremost, you'd need a really clear definition of what national service actually means. Like, are we talking strictly military service, or would it encompass a broader range of options? You know, like community work, environmental conservation, maybe even teaching.
Right. That's a huge question right there. Defining the scope is crucial, because a one-size-fits-all approach just wouldn't work in a country as diverse as ours. You'd have people with different skills, different interests, different beliefs. Trying to force everyone into the same mold would be a recipe for disaster.
Exactly. Diversity of service opportunities is absolutely essential, and it would require a massive effort to create and manage a system that's both flexible and equitable. You'd also need to think about things like accessibility, making sure that service opportunities are available to people from all socioeconomic backgrounds and all geographic locations.
And what about inclusivity? We need to make sure that everyone, regardless of their background or abilities, feels welcome and valued in their service experience.
100%. A successful national service program has to be inclusive and equitable. It has to provide opportunities for everyone to contribute in a meaningful way. But beyond the logistics and the organization, I think one of the biggest hurdles would be cultural.
Okay, so we've got the practical side of things, setting up the program. But then there's this whole cultural piece. Mm-hmm. How do you instill a sense of purpose and meaning in a program where participation isn't exactly voluntary?
That's the million-dollar question, right? I think you'd need to strike this delicate balance between structure and autonomy, guidance and individual choice. You want people to feel like they're actually contributing something valuable, not just going through the motions.
Right. It can't just feel like another obligation, like filing your taxes or renewing your driver's license. It needs to be something that really resonates with people on a deeper level. Something that sparks a sense of pride and accomplishment.
Absolutely. And to do that, I think it's crucial to emphasize the educational and personal development aspects of national service. It's not just about doing a job. It's about learning new skills, expanding your horizons, and growing as a person.
So it's almost like creating a national curriculum, a set of shared experiences and learning outcomes that every participant can benefit from, regardless of their specific service path.
That's a great way to put it. And I think it's also crucial to emphasize the social and civic benefits of national service. You know, it's a chance to connect with people from different backgrounds, to learn about different communities, and to really gain a deeper understanding of the issues facing our nation.
It could be a powerful antidote to all the polarization and division we see in society today. A chance to build bridges, build empathy, and foster a sense of shared purpose.
Exactly. And who knows, maybe through these shared experiences, we could even rediscover a sense of national unity, a belief in something bigger than ourselves.
Now, that's a hopeful thought. It makes you wonder if maybe just maybe mandatory national service could be more than just a solution to the recruitment crisis. Maybe it could be a catalyst for something much bigger, a chance to really redefine what it means to be an American in the 21st century.
It's definitely a thought-provoking idea, and whether or not it ever becomes a reality, I think the conversation itself is incredibly valuable. It forces us to really examine our values, our priorities, and our responsibilities to each other and to our nation.
It's a reminder that even amidst all the complex challenges and uncertainties we face, there's always room for hope, for innovation, and for the pursuit of a better future.
Well said. And at the end of the day, that's what this whole deep dive has been about. Exploring the challenges, considering the possibilities, and sparking a conversation about the kind of Navy and the kind of nation we want to build for the future.
We've gone deep on the state of the U.S. Navy, from its troubled present to its uncertain future. We've examined the issues, we've considered the potential solutions, and we've even dared to imagine a future where the Navy not only survives, but thrives.
It's been a fascinating journey, and I hope our listeners have walked away with some valuable insights.
We've covered a lot of ground. But this conversation doesn't end here. We encourage you to keep exploring these issues, to challenge your own assumptions, and to engage in thoughtful dialogue about the future of the U.S. Navy and its role in the world.
Because ultimately, the choices we make today will shape the course of the Navy and indeed the nation for generations to come.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time.